Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here December 29th, pre-taping the show, but it's going to air December 31st, and it's our annual Mike Causey, Tammy Flanagan, and Bob Lines look into the coming calendar year, the good, bad, and maybe not so pretty. So why don't we start off with the maybe not so bad? And there is discussion of chain colas, there is discussion of higher tax rates, which we'll go into later. I don't know that we want to do that because that's kind of heavy duty. But Mike brought in a paper today from Politico, and there's three articles on the financial cliff.
I wonder what we'll be doing this time next year for this show. But this is Politico, Friday, December 28th. Very respected journal. They really do inside baseball, inside politics, and they know it, and they're the world's leading authority. And three of the five stories on the front page, one says fiscal cliff action shifts to Senate. The second one says longer the cliff dive, harder the economic hit. And the third one is silver lining, a delay in hitting debt limit. And then there are two other political stories. And I wonder if this time next year we'll even remember what fiscal cliff meant and can define sequestration. You know, it just shows you how timely these things are and how they recycle. And I delighted a group last week, and I can say this because Tammy did all the work, but I was talking to a group of feds, and many of them were concerned about what's going to happen even up through the end of this year, end of 2012, and pointed out that the Air Force had sent out a memo to its civilian employees saying, look, this is what's pending. These are the things that are going to happen. This is the likely impact. As soon as they are official, we will give you the Office of Personnel Management update on them and tell you how to act accordingly. And it was an increase from the high three to the high five retirement contributions. You know, as they said in the movie Casablanca, round up the usual suspects. And it goes through this laundry list of things that people have been worried about for the last 2 years. And then the kicker, of course, as Tammy pointed out to me, is you look at the date on it. And it's, I think, January 1985. And we're talking about the same old, same old. The same things are being dredged up again and again. So I don't mean to minimize them and be overly cynical, but if you remember earlier this year and even in 2011, the number of people who contacted all of us and said, look, I'm going to retire before they change the formula. I'm going to retire before they increase the contributions. And everybody was ready to go, and nothing happened.
Now, I've had a few emails just recently in the last few weeks saying, do you think I should move up my retirement date to December 31st? And to tell you the truth, I can't think of any reason why you would want to change your retirement date based on anything that might happen in Congress this week, unless you weren't ready to retire to begin with. So I really think it stands back to the same advice that if you can afford it and you're mentally prepared for it, then you should retire and choose the date that's best for you, not based on what might or should or could happen. Because, you know, there's going to be changes in the future, and we've had changes in the past. And the reality is very little really changes majorly. You know, a lot of those changes are prevented from happening by the lobbyists in Congress and by the pressure on Congress not to do anything drastic.
All right. You wrote an article on this, and I think you entitled it Don't Jump. And you just did it recently, correct?
Yep. Well, that was the draft title. But that was my idea, was like, don't jump off the cliff because you're reading the media headlines of everything that's possible in the universe and really not seeing anything in there that's going to have a detrimental effect to federal employees and their retirement benefit. You know, there have only been really one or two changes that would affect retirement benefits during this whole season, and that has been the change in retirement contributions, but that's only for new employees who have yet to be hired after tomorrow, after January 1st. And the other change is the pay freeze that's been ongoing since 2010, which does impact a retirement benefit because it kind of froze the high three. But we just found out last week on the 28th that the president is under executive order authorizing a pay increase for 2013, which it's not much, but hey, it's
and
an increase.
When would that be effective, and how much is it going to be?
Well, the amount of the pay increase, you know, take a seat, stand, don't stand up when you hear this. It's 0.5%, half a percent. And it's going to take effect the first pay period after March 27th of 2013. So in the springtime, federal employees will get somewhat of a pay increase, not too much. A 0.5% on 100,000, that's $500 a year, $60 a month after taxes. What would that be, Bob?
But, you know, they could take the additional $500 next year and put it into the thrift because the dollar magnitude goes up $500.
After they put the extra 2% into the FICA tax.
Oh, that. Yeah.
And the new employees have to put an extra 1.3%, Mike, into the retirement fund. So it's gonna get absorbed into everything else. But hey, it's not the worst news that could happen. So
what they're talking, as Tammy pointed out, this new contribution increase for the retirement fund, it applies only to new employees or to people who are coming back into the government with less than 5 years service. So a lot of people, most people now will be exempt. This is new hires only and only some new hires. And some people have said, well, with this and with the pay freeze, the government's not going to be able to attract the best and brightest. It may not be able to attract anybody. And the counter argument to that is, where are they going to go? Where are these new college graduates going to go to find a company that's still functioning, still paying, albeit frozen salaries, that still has a retirement plan, that still has a 401k, that still has a good holiday system, and still has a superb medical program? So the argument is, where else would they go?
Yeah, I just found the number. It's 2.3% additional into the retirement fund under this revised annuitant employee system. But like you're saying, Mike, you know, where else can you go to even have a retirement? You know, these days in private industry, you're lucky to have a 401k plan with a match. So having a pension plus the thrift savings plan is still, I think, superior to most private sector plans that I've been looking at out there.
Every couple of years, I check with the Employee Benefit Research Institute. They are the go-to people as far as pensions are concerned. They track them all over the country. And I said, how many private companies in the U.S. have any kind of how many have a retirement plan? And it's less than half. And of those that do have a retirement plan, how many of them have an inflation protection? That is, they get the cost of living adjustment or partial cost of living adjustment. And the answer is zero.
Okay. Tammy, let's go back to this. Did you say 2.3%?
2.3% increase, which will make their contributions 3.1 as opposed to 0.8%.
Okay. And for those of you all that might be scratching your head, what Tammy's talking about is any federal employee, with the exception of the military, has this involuntary withholding each pay period to help fund their retirement. The FERS is a greater percent than what the CSRS is, but this is going to go up a full 2.3%, not 2.3% of the other number.
No, it's the current employees, and current employees will continue to contribute 0.8%, less than 1% of payroll. But the employees who are first hired on January 1st or rehired with less than 5 years of civilian creditable or potentially creditable service, they'll be paying 2.3 plus the 0.8, so it's a total of 3.1%. And here's something for the urban myth folks, you know, the people who like to read the urban myths that go around on the internet. This law that took effect that's causing this increased retirement contribution is also a law that created a retirement system for members of Congress and congressional employees that will be the same as other federal employees. In other words, they will no longer have an enhanced retirement, and that would be for those members who take office after December 31st and also congressional employees who are hired after this year.
So they're grandfathering in not only current federal workers,
of course,
but also current members of Congress and current staffers.
Yep. So if one was looking then at their bring-home pay, if you will, let's leave taxes out of this for just a second. We're going to have a greater percentage of Social Security. What Social Security is going to pop back up to what
6.2.
It was, 2%, and then this could be another 2.3, so that could be 4% haircut from their salary, not from their net paycheck. So if their salary was, say, $2,000 per pay period, then it would lose about $800. Or excuse me, not $80. $80. Good. I'm an accountant. All right.
See, I believed you.
Hey, that sounded much more dramatic. I like using those dramatic numbers.
Okay. But what I'm saying is it's easy for me to say it's not a killer. It sounds a lot worse than what it is. It's not pleasant.
Yeah. And I think one of the fallouts from this is the fact that I think if employees realize they're contributing more than their coworkers, they're going to feel that they can't afford to put as much in their TSP account, which is unfortunate. So I think they should still strive to make those contributions to thrift, because that's going to be the key to their
I was just thinking last night about, you know, what are we going to do on the show if people feel, gee, my bring home pay hardly gets me from payday to payday, and now it's going to be less. Maybe I'll have to back off the TSP, which has the multiplier reverse effect. Mm-hmm. It might give you more, but you're going to pay taxes on it, so it isn't quite as much as you think, and you don't get the proverbial miracle of compounding inside of the investment. So you really take a step backwards.
Well, you know, I haven't seen the numbers lately, but every year somebody works out what the average federal worker gets in salary. You know, averages are always an interesting figure, even if they're a tad bit confusing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get into an argument, does this include Washington area only with all its high paid people? Does this include the Postal Service with so many lower paid employees? But the bottom line is the average salary the last time I saw it was something like $90,000. For federal workers. Now, I don't know if that's high or low. I think in many parts of the country that would be considered
quite high.
A handsome salary, you know. And again, when you talk about people having to ratchet back, it's really from what? And if you're making 40, then that thrift savings plan contribution is a killer. And I know when I was younger, when the 401k plans were first set up, I thought, gee, that's nice. And then went on about my business. I couldn't even begin to afford it. But when you get up there and you get, you know, middle age, middle salary, become average, and you crunch the numbers, you say to yourself, I can't not take advantage of this. And if you're FERS, which the vast majority of people are and will be in the future, you at least can't afford to take the first 5% to get that matching 5% contribution. I mean, it's just not an option.
Agreed, but it's sometimes hard to get across to somebody that maybe just entered the workforce. They could carry a debt load. They may have been unemployed for a while, and so they just, I can't do that. But they almost have to. I won't say it's free money, but it's the closest thing to free money. They still have to work for it, but...
Yeah, I think mostly really important to hire salaried employees to make sure you take advantage of the thrift. However, a word of comfort for those who work at more moderate salaries. You know, if you're in the GS-7, 5, 3 range, your Social Security benefit is tilted somewhat so that it would provide a bigger replacement of your income when you do retire. So don't feel that if you can't afford, really truly can't afford to put money in the thrift plan because you're paying your bills to live, that you'll still be okay. You know, if you work a normal career from, you know, age 22 to 62, and you work those 40 years and just, you know, contribute what you can, I think you'll still be okay.
In these last negotiations at the end of 2012, one of the things that was at play was that Social Security supplement. What happened to that?
It's still out there. Nothing's happened to it. It's still there. So it is possible that not only the Social Security supplement, but also the contributions for current employees could increase under a proposal that is still kind of out there floating. But we'll see if anything happened over the weekend or if anything's going to happen in the near future. But so far, nothing's happened to it.
And that supplement is a really big deal. I suspect it's one of those things that people who are eligible for it excuse me, aren't really aware of what it does or what it will do for them. But the idea is if you retire earlier than your Social Security retirement age, and many federal workers can, I think it's 62.
Right.
If you retire under age 62, you get a supplement from the government that makes up the difference in what you would have gotten had you waited until age 62. It can be thousands of dollars in the cases of some upper.
Right now it averages around $800 to $1,200 a month for people who are currently retiring. And OPM put out a study that said about half of all FERS employees who retire right now are getting the supplement. That means those are the employees who, like you said, Mike, are retiring under age 62, and they have to retire on an unreduced immediate retirement. So it can't be a deferred retirement. It can't be an MRA plus 10. But for employees who are, let's say, 56 with 30 years or 60 with 20 years of service, those are the employees who are going to get the supplement. The employees who take the early outs, you know, the VERA, VSIP, if they're taking an early retirement, they'll also get the supplement, but they won't get it until they reach their minimum retirement age. And of course, all the special groups like law enforcement and firefighters, they depend on the supplement, you know, for their retirements as well. So, yeah, it's a big deal to those employees who
money,
get it.
Yeah, potentially a lot of money.
$1,000 a month. Yeah,
and
that's
many people
pay some
aren't
bills.
Aware of that it's even at play out there.
And the supplement, if I'm not mistaken, has a Social Security kind of base calculation to it, but it's not paid by Social Security.
Right.
It's paid by OPM.
It's paid as part of their FERS retirement
tax-wise,
benefit.
Tax-wise, Social Security is very tax-efficient, but this is not Social Security. This is going to be pretty much fully subject to tax.
And there's no COLA.
But it's a good thing.
Yeah, and there's no cost of living on it either. So it's a level payment as long as you get it. So if you get it from 56 to 62 and it's $1,000 a month, it'll be $1,000 a month for 7 years. So it doesn't go up with COLA until you actually start apply for and start receiving your Social Security benefit.
All right. As long as we're talking about tax, we could take a segue into this. When they talk about the cliff and the two parties can't get together on what the tax rates would be, but if we, quote, fell off the cliff and we went back to the pre-Bush tax rates, I think it's good to keep in mind that it's not as bad as it's made out to be for most, not for all. The way all of us pay tax, I mean, this is all of us, is confusing at a minimum, but people would talk about income. Well, your income isn't what you pay taxes on. So if your salary is X, you don't pay tax on X. You pay tax on X minus, like what y'all just talked about, money in the TSP. So that reduces what you'd have to pay taxes on. Also, things that you pay for. You might have a mortgage and you might have mortgage interest. You might have real estate taxes. You might have charities. Let's say you have none of those. They still give you what's called a standard deduction. So again, let's look at the number. So let's use the average that was thrown out and say it was $90,000. And let's say that person put in $10,000 into the thrift. Well, they don't pay tax now on anything but 90 minus 10, but they also get these deductions. And let's say that they're another 10. So now we're down to 70. And then they allow you something called a personal exemption just because you had one breath in one day of the year or 365 days. And that reduces it another 4,000 almost. So what I'm saying is when they talk about these tax rates, it's not on what you make. So it could be 25% on what you make. But then it goes into, I liken this to walking upstairs. When you walk in a building, you're at the ground level. You're at the least tax rate. Once you step up on the first stair, you're at a higher level. So you pay a higher tax.
But just now, on that portion.
Just on that portion. So the first group of dollars are very lightly taxed, currently extremely low. But if this changed, it would go up a bit. It might go up as much as $800. Then there's a second tier. That's not going to change. So in other words, if somebody made up to a certain level, and I don't want to use numbers because it's dizzying, because there's a different number for somebody that files married filing jointly versus single, or somebody that's single but has a kid in the house, mm-hmm. and then they have a different tax rate. But what I'm trying to get at mm-hmm. is these rates that are going to take off are more geared at people that would have, quote, taxable income. Now, remember, taxable income is your income minus all your deductions. They get to be over $217,000, and in some case over $388,000. So it's not for the bulk of the listening audience. I'm not going to say you won't hurt from it. You'll take a hit. Mm-hmm. And then somebody's saying to themselves, yeah, but you just told me I'm going to take a 4% hit otherwise. Yeah, you mm-hmm. are. That's a given. We're not so sure about these rates. My gut is there'll be some compromise where the one side will say, okay, we'll move off the 250 and we'll go up to a higher level, and they'll meet somewhere that's still very high for most people. I don't have any direct line into anybody, but it just seems to me that there's a little fear now that they've got to do something by stroke of midnight. And as you mentioned once before, Mike, you've heard once that they move the hands of the clock back
yeah.
at midnight
so
to make
there,
sure
so
that
it.
The law passed.
Yeah.
So
when Congress convenes, you know, this being Monday the 31st, they convened yesterday, so by the time this airs, we may know something that yeah. we don't know as we're speaking right
but
now.
My gut is this is what's going to happen. I'm not the knower of all things. I've been around a while to look at tax rate changes, and very few do they do retroactive. In other words, they can't kick the can down the road and say, oh, we'll revisit this in 6 months. That's just suicide for the IRS.
I know as a professional accountant, you literally have an inside line of the IRS, as people do. What's this uncertainty doing to the IRS? I mean, they've got people, this is a busy season for them. They've got people working around the clock now. They have rates to look at. They have forms to be processed. Your estimated tax for 2012, I think the last payment is due in mid-January. And, I mean, this has got to be nightmare time for the IRS.
It's a good comment, but 2012 is
already set.
Unaffected by any of this.
Right.
The only thing it is affected by, for the bulk of it, it's not going to have any impact on anybody. But the IRS has to program their computers, and there's one thing that's going to be rough if they don't do it. If I mention the term alternative minimum tax, there's a huge misunderstanding as to what this is. Does it impact people? Yes. But like anything else in taxes, you figure up your taxes one way, and then you figure up an alternative way. And it's pretty much the same way that you do your regular return, but they don't allow you some deductions. But then they exempt a certain amount from the alternative minimum tax. And this is really important to understand. And this is what they're fighting about. It's called the alternative minimum patch. At the beginning of 2012, the people that would be subjected to alternative minimum tax would grow substantially if they didn't put this patch thing in, all right? And if they don't put this patch thing in, then they've got some issues exactly like what you say, Mike. How do they do the returns? It's my understanding, and don't say that this is gospel, that the IRS has programmed their computers as to the patch being put in. If it's not put in, they're going to have trouble processing returns.
Mm-hmm. For 2012.
And I imagine that's going to be even until March. Mm-hmm. Please, nobody should misunderstand that. He said that they're going to.
Yeah,
I didn't say that.
We don't know.
But they've taken a guess. They guessed it's going to be fixed.
They did this a year or two ago, and I have to admire the IRS, I guess you call it the director. And he wrote a letter to Congress, and he said, I don't know what you all are doing, but this is what we're doing.
Michael Astru. No, that's Social Security.
Yeah. And I thought, wow. And now he, if you will, guessed right.
Uh-huh.
And so they were ready. And they're ready, assuming the patch is going to come in. Personally, I just don't see how they don't put the patch in, because there's going to be, as we've already discussed, enough changes with somebody's tax going forward, but now this is going backward, and it would reduce refunds, or it would increase balance dues for 2012 that otherwise appears to be set. Now, as a tax professional, when I do a projection for somebody at the end of the year, and you know, we talk about this alternative minimum tax, I got two programs. I say, okay, this assumes the patch, and this one doesn't.
So you can see the difference.
And again, we're talking normal people. We're not talking about people that make $400,000 and $500,000 a year. This could hit the middle class hard, which is reason I don't think it's going to happen.
Like a two-income Fed in the D.C. area could
be. Yeah, or two-income Fed almost anywhere. Unless they're extremely low paid.
Mm-hmm.
This could not be pretty. I won't try to explain.
Does the software that people use, you know, whatever it is, TurboTax and H&R Block Tax Cut, do they have both versions in there?
Or? I'll be honest, I don't know.
I wonder.
I have enough trouble with mine. I've seen TurboTax over the years. I think it's a fine product. The H&R Block is a fine product. I'm not leaving anybody out. It's just those seem
you don't
to
have
be
a use for
most
it
of the people use.
I mean, you don't use TurboTax to do your professional returns, huh?
Oh, no.
Secretary of Treasury Tim Geithner used TurboTax.
I'll tell you why I don't use TurboTax. TurboTax, if you use it and you live in a state, you buy the federal program and you buy the state program. Well, I have to be ready to do every state in
the country.
I don't do every state in the country, but I do a fair number of outside the local metro D.C. area. So I might not understand the Nebraska return, but I will understand it by the time I sign it, but the program will do it.
Yeah.
But there's some things, any program, I don't care what the program is, you got to know the peculiarities in another state. Otherwise, you could do it wrong, right. Just like doing your federal return. You might.
It almost seems to me like the IRS should come out with a tax program that's universal, so anybody picking it up off the shelf would have the same. Because it seems like there's probably little differences between those different programs.
I am certain that there are, but the IRS will never do that because
the political pressure on them.
Political pressure and being sued.
Yeah.
I used it. You didn't tell me that I couldn't do that. And and this happens with, I'm going to
even
call them
the
commercial
paper returns,
programs.
I think,
somebody will bring this in. They said, and I said, you're not entitled to do that. Well, the program didn't stop me. Well, you know, the program is only as good as the data in there.
Right.
So if somebody put the wrong information in there, the program will print out a diagnostic and say, have you looked at this? And nobody looks at diagnostics. Oh, is that what that's for? Yeah.
Bob, you and I had a, to me, interesting conversation. Anytime I can say a conversation about taxes or numbers is interesting, it's really pretty good. But we're talking about professional athletes, the Redskins, the Wizards, the Diplomats, the what have you. And they play here, and then they get paid. And they play in Toronto, and they get paid. And they play in Denver. Is it something called a source tax? Are they taxed in every jurisdiction that they earn income?
They sure are.
That's incredible.
And some of them, let's say these are the professional athletes that you have different leagues. For example, the soccer league. Everybody's paid by the soccer league, all the players. They're not paid by the clubs. So we do a return or two from soccer players, and they might have 12 state tax returns, but they get the W-2. Now, a player for another team, whether it's football, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, they say, here's your pay, Mike. Here's your pay, Tammy. Have a good life as far as doing the tax return. So they would have to hire somebody that, and truth of the matter is, with some of the money those people make, they have professionals do that. They're not using TurboTax. They're not using the, but they have to do that. But they may have been in that city once a year to play the game. But figure that, let's say, we're the finance committee of that city. We want to tax them because they made a lot of money on that one game.
A lot of money.
Now, let's take it down to another level. Let's say that in concept, any one of the three of us, that if we went outside and we earned a certain amount of money in a different state or city, it could be subject to tax even for us. Every state is different. I won't mention one state, but if you're there 2 days a year, you have to allocate your income for the 2 days that you spent there, even if you just went to a meeting.
Which could explain why some of these people with their business managers are literally careful about where they take a meeting.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's that important. Well, you know, I used to wonder as a kid, you'd hear about boxing greats, Joe Louis and all these others, and every one of them was brought down by income taxes, failure to pay. And I used to think, how stupid could they be? They're making jillions of dollars. They must have an accountant, and yet they're behind in their taxes. But if you see this source tax, if you fight in Nevada is not a good example because there's no state tax, I think. But if you fight in New York and the purse is $2 million, then you have earned $2 million that evening in New York, correct?
Yeah. And it could be a band not of national note. Years ago, we were fortunate enough to do the accounting work for a band. And they were just a bunch of kids that played locally, but then they started playing outside, and then all of a sudden they hit it. And I was never so relieved that they left and went to a professional band manager. Because what do I know about Ohio amusement taxes? As in zero. And then when they sell the merchandise?
Oh, that's another whole headache.
So... And we're going to see more and more and more of that, at least in my life, the people listening, you know, hopefully you'll find that to be a headache, but hopefully you won't as well. And somebody's going to say, now, Mike said that, you know, when I go to a meeting and outside of my, am I going to be taxed in the area? Most likely not, because uncle is providing you the paycheck and they're not going to track all that.
Right.
And I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong, but, you know, for a day, they're not going to track.
You're still getting paid by your employer, which is in D.C.
Yeah. Let me switch over to one other tax that people are really bristling about, that it's going to be a, quote, Medicare tax on investment income. But it's only for people that make a lot. Now, I mentioned the term taxable income. The threshold for this is not taxable income. This is your total income. And it's high, though, if it would impact people married filing jointly that had a total income of $250,000 or a single person of $200,000. Not out of the realm for all feds. There could be that, where they would pay their regular income tax rate that we just mentioned, plus they'd have this Medicare tax at 3.8%, depending on how much they made. I don't want to go through that because that'll make your hair hurt.
Is it on the amount above a certain limit, or is it on
the amount above a certain limit?
So you'd still pay the 1.45% up till you hit that threshold.
Yeah, but this is just a total add-on to help fund the change
Medicare.
In the healthcare law.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some things coming, but I think it's more the people at the higher end, but they could get hit. I don't want to minimize the comment, but
is there anything anybody can do right now, like today, before the new year, to minimize any of these changes, like cash in investments you were going to cash in 2013 and 2012?
Very good question.
Or get your last paycheck in 2012 when you normally would have got it in 2013?
You could move your paycheck around, which most feds can't, you pretty much want the paycheck at December 31st, because if the tax rates are going up next year at a minimum, you're going to shave something off. So it's the exact opposite of what anybody listening or anybody in this room has ever thought. It was always push income off and accelerate deductions. The exact opposite this year for most, not for all. But yeah, that could be one comment, Tammy. And the other people would be inclined to sell stock on the 31st, which is when we're going to be broadcasting this, because if they're in a gain position, if they're lucky enough after the last few days to still be in a gain position, it would be at a lower tax rate. Now, here's where you really have to scratch your head. Are you selling it to save the taxes?
Exactly.
Because then you're getting off the train, really.
Exactly.
And how fast you get back on the train.
Yep.
So once you've sold the stock, it's gone.
Yeah.
And if it goes up, which in the last few days it's not, but if we get a bounce,
then you'd be buying high. Your ticket will cost more to get back on the train.
I think I'd rather stay on the train.
Yeah.
Unless I knew what was going to happen.
One thing people could do, and of course they should have done it earlier, is charitable contributions. Mm-hmm. If you're going to make them, you know, December is a very popular month for a good reason, you know, and get that check in, get it cashed. The money you put in the Salvation Army pot is usually cash, and that's all well and good, but that's your word for it, but you need to have a canceled check, correct?
There was a court case just recently, and it's a very interesting one, and it might ruffle the feathers of somebody that's very charitable, and this was a religious organization where the individuals gave the religious organization, had the canceled check, and claimed it. They were audited. The auditor denied the deduction because they didn't have an acknowledgement back from the charitable organization. Went to tax court and lost. Canceled check.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've noticed any contribution I've made this year, I've received something from the organization, a letter thanking me and specifying the amount that
they're
I donated.
They're required, actually, to do that. Yeah.
So,
there
should be some kind of reciprocal letter, which I guess
there
I can sort of understand that.
They went and got the letter in this case. And they
still
go, no.
Didn't matter. Didn't matter.
That was that because it was after the fact?
It was after the fact, but some people, not these people, I don't know these people from Adam, could take a liberty where if you write a check to a charitable organization, your child might go to after school classes, or they might take religious classes that may not be tax deductible.
Might be some value.
And so if they gave a dollar, and they really are not supposed to deduct a dollar if they got something in return for it, any more than if we go to a charitable event and we get a dinner out of it. And let's say we spend $50. We're not supposed to deduct $50, but the charitable organization is the one that says, okay, the dinner was worth $10, so you can deduct $40. And it's like, Tammy, like you say, it's usually in that letter.
Oh, well, when I give money to public TV or PBS, the radio, I always decline the gift so that, I usually don't need it. You know, another album of Kenny Rogers, no thank you. You know.
but
the bottom line is,
you
get the
more.
Full deduction, yeah. So.
Or you could get the Ed Slott book or the Rich Edelman book. And, you know, Ed Slott, for those of you that don't know, is like the IRA Holy Grail guru. And I understand he's the number one fundraiser on PBS. Why? Who listens to PBS? with all due respect, Mike, you and I have gray hair. Tammy still is blonde.
Oh, yeah. That's what you think.
All righty. So enough of my, I won't say it's bad news. I think it's more.
Just be aware of
just,
news.
The emails that I'm getting from clients as well as from the NIT peers. It's like, what's going to happen to me? And it's not.
The world
pleasant,
is not going
to
end.
But it's not as bad as it's rumored to be.
The world was supposed to end, and it didn't. So
yeah,
we're still going to go
calendar,
on.
Yeah. There was a special a week after December 21st, and the world had not ended. So somebody
it was a celebration.
Did not plan
it?
Well. No, they were going right along with it. You know, it will it, won't it?
All righty. And just tax-wise, there are some things that expired after 2011 that people may not be aware of that haven't been around all year. They will be. Now, these are not major things or small things. Like, for example, a teacher can deduct if they spend money out of their pocket to maybe on a field trip or they couldn't get enough crepe paper. So they bought crepe paper so they could deduct $250. That went away. I don't know if it's coming back. It's not huge, but there are some little surprises probably coming for most of us.
You know, interesting side note, just to that thing, if you're most big cities, I don't know if they have them, but if you go to a smaller town, and occasionally I'll visit this particular town, and there's a store that it caters only to teachers. Mm-hmm. And they have everything, the supplies or whatnot. And when you see these teachers in there buying extra stuff, and it's their own money, and it is really heartwarming. I mean, some of them are young women and men in their 20s, and they're in there buying the stuff for the kids that the school doesn't supply. It's not like the D.C. area where the PTAs are so wealthy and generous and, you know, buy the kids. These are,
even around here, though, the teachers I know still purchase out of their pocket.
Yeah, that's
lots
a good.
Of things.
And if it's if there's some abuse, so be it. You know?
And, you know, a lot of them don't even know that this provision's been
I'm
in
sure
law
not.
For a long time.
Yeah, that's,
and you tell them that, and
you
go, really?
They're not doing it for a tax purpose. Yeah.
No.
Alrighty, so enough of my tax. tax. It's not depression. It's really a reality.
Just
look at it.
Just to know what's going on. Yeah. Be aware.
We're not jumping off the cliff and we're going to fall down to the bottom and get smashed with taxes.
Retirees will be a little bit happy because they'll see an extra 1.7% in their retirement checks on January 1st. So
and they're usually
be a little
not
going to
get
boost.
Hit by too much of this. They get might get nicked at that first level, but probably not much at all at the second level and a little bit at the third. And the good news with folks that are retiring and get Social Security is very tax efficient. It's not necessarily like the federal annuity. Depending on the size of your income, it could be not subject to tax whatsoever, maybe 50% subject to tax. But for most people, 85%. That means it's 15%
tax-free.
Non-taxable. Mm-hmm. And in many, but not all states, it's not subject to income tax. So it's, you know, it's a nice deal tax-wise.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
All right, let's get off of taxes. Let's go back to Tammy's. Let's not jump.
Jump off the cliff.
So if somebody stays on, it's a little late to be handing in your papers today. If they stay
nobody
on.
Nobody will be there to take them.
No. So if they stay on, they get closer to a higher high three, I suppose, but that might not make any difference because there hasn't been much of a change in their compensation, right?
So, not too much. Yeah, no. The last basic pay increase was January 2010, and the next one will be sometime after March of 2013. So it's conceivable that an employee could be retiring early this year with the same salary in effect for the last 3 years. So their high three has essentially become the high one. You know, we've always wanted a high one, but
now
this is not the way we wanted it.
Well, and you know, the other thing, too, that goes under the radar screen, because people take it so much for granted that they don't even consider it a benefit or a perk, and that is the within-grade pay raises.
Yeah, and those have not been frozen.
99.9% of the people who become eligible for them get them. Mm-hmm. People get them depending on their
time
length of service every 1, 2, or 3 years. So in the past 2 years, easily a third, possibly a half, of all white-collar federal workers have gotten a 3% pay raise. Thanks to the within grade.
And then some have gotten promotions. Yeah, promotions are still happening.
Exactly,
yeah. That still goes on.
And that would impact the calculation of the high
three. It would if you got one. There's a lot of employees, though, by the time they're put in their 30, 35, or 40 years, they may have gotten their last step increase, you know, 5 years ago or longer. So for many of the current retiring employees, they may not have received a step increase unless they're lower on the service end. If they only have 10 years or 20 years of service, then they might still be getting them. So it just depends. And they know who they are because we watch those as I remember being a federal employee. You know exactly when your next within grade is due. You count on that.
Knock on the door. Hi, yeah. I'm back again.
and we always put in more into the thrift when that comes. You say, okay, take a little bit of that pay increase and contribute because the TSP contribution goes up $500 next year. So it goes from 17 to 17.5.
Okay. Then, all the fans of Tammy Flanagan pay heed to that comment.
Well, you know, the Carter administration went after the within grade raises, and they called them being there increases because of that Peter Sellers movie and that wonderful Jerzy Kaczynski book about the guy that didn't function very well, but he just showed up and he benefited from everything. And that's what the Carter people said about these within grades. And of course, people were incensed. They said they're not automatic. Mm-hmm. They're earned. They're performance based. And then you found out that 99.98% of the people who became eligible got them. So that's pretty close to being automatic.
All righty. Tammy, with regards, and Mike, there's going to be these budget cuts that are going to come whatever they pass today. There'll be budget cuts next year. Now, not being in your world, it's my understanding that they have to meet certain budget cuts by the end of September, and they would have had to have saved a certain amount by. So everything doesn't happen January 1st. I mean, so somebody could say,
agencies all have their furlough plans in place, right, so that if they have to take advantage of that, they will. And it can go in a variety of ways. It can be one day a week furlough, or certain employees affected by it, depending on the needs of the agency and what they need to get done. So employees will have plenty of notice to know if they're going to have a furlough or not.
And they can do like they did in the 1970s when there was a similar situation, and it was across the board cuts in government. Mm-hmm. And they said, except for defense, which is the largest federal agency, and except for the Postal Service, second largest, and except for VA, mm-hmm, third largest. And then they started exempting the IRS, naturally, and
then
the
they
FBI.
Saved $10.
Yeah. And you know, there, and to, at the end of the day, a couple of months, Senator Roth of Delaware was one of the champions of that. But most of the government had been exempt. And Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner has said that with all of the storm and drung about this, that he's got a couple of months wiggle room in some of these decisions that have to be made. And I got an email actually today, and it's from a guy, from Phil at the Federal Trade Commission. And he says, thought you want to know, the FTC has told its employees that if the government goes over the fiscal cliff, there will be no furloughs or RIFs. The commission plans to cut back expenses in other areas. Now, assume that's true. Mm-hmm. It's a small agency, but that kind of thing could be happening all over government. The furlough plans that Tammy pointed out, they're there and they're real. The threat is up to 20 days. Not 20 days at one time, but for some agencies, 20 days. But that's a long time between now and it actually happening. Mm-hmm. It's a contingency plan, and it's also a threat. It's also, you're dangling out to Congress there, and you're saying, I'm with the National Park Service. Tourist season is coming up. We may have to shut down Yellowstone.
I think they've already cut back on some of the hours of some of the parks.
Sure.
And they
have a number of, they have social security offices and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean, they actually close them. They just say, we're going to shut it down. And I was in Mammoth Cave, Kentucky, in a park one year, and they had curtailed services dramatically. And we went down 200 feet to the Crystal Caverns, and one of the oldest cave systems in the world. And the park ranger gave us a long lecture about the cheapness of, I think Jim Watt was the Secretary of the Interior, and I thought, well, you got a captive audience.
Yeah, we can't get out of here.
We're 200 feet below. We don't know how to get out. But you're bad mouthing your boss and the Congress. And
you know what you just said? Just a light bulb just went off. Calling the IRS is rough during the day. You'll sit on the phone for a long time. So over the years, I just started calling at 7 or 8 at night. And they have a pretty good system, so you might be talking to somebody in California, and I could get through within 10 minutes or so instead of an hour and a half. That's gone.
It's
7 o'clock, that thing shuts down. But if you call at 7 a.m., heavens forbid, but at least you get through pretty quickly.
That's true when you call Social Security and OPM, call early or late. Because you can avoid the rush.
But they cut the hours back.
Yeah.
And it never dawned on me. And now it does. But so the reverse, I said, well, I'll call. And as much as I might not like it, I'd rather call at 7 a.m. and get through than call at 10 a.m. and sit there on hold. Listen, they play this Blue Danube Waltz and the same background music for 30 years. And you just grit your teeth, but you can't turn the sound down because if somebody comes on, you have to jump on it.
Yeah. But like Mike was saying from that email he got from that employee, that agencies have other ways they can cut budgets, you know, whether it's training funds or equipment funds or, you know, other things they can do, cut hours. And employees are not always going to be the first ones on the chopping block, but they're probably the most expensive things.
So. They're all labor intensive, very high. And the other thing is they can also designate who are emergency employees. Mm-hmm. And if they want to keep I've seen several stories a couple of months back from the national media, but they don't cover the government as a people operation. You know, they cover it as committees and things. And they were talking, every one of them cited furloughed FBI agents and DEA agents idled at home. I don't think so.
Let me ask you all a question, because I think you're more mainstream with this than I. If you were to talk to people at different agencies, do they look to maintain the staff and not furlough them first and cut the other expenses first? In other words, I want to keep my people. I want to keep them happy. And if we got to furlough them, we keep them at a minimum, but we won't buy the latest computer, or maybe we won't do X, Y, or Z to cut the budgets. And it's a lot of cutting to equal what you pay somebody.
Probably depends on what budget they had to begin with for equipment and other expenses, because it might have been lean based on past budget problems.
So, yeah, if they've already cut travel and training, then those are natural places to look at. Mm-hmm. But if they've already cut them, then you have that problem. And again, and I don't mean to be too sinister with this, but a lot of it depends on the intent of the agency. You know, we talk about the famous Washington Monument cuts, and the idea is in the spring, Congress has cut the budget of the Interior Department, which controls the Washington Monument, top tourist attraction here. And all these buses, these yellow buses from Canton, Ohio, and, you know, Waukegan come into town, and the kids are hopeful and starry-eyed. And they drive up to the monument, and they say, nope, sorry, it's closed. Your Congress has closed it down. And then the kids call home, and the parents at home call the congressional office, and it gets reopened. And that is a Washington Monument cut. And you can take it across the government. You can take it to, you know, national parks are favorite spots. They're natural spots. But, and again, without being cynical, but if the agency wants to make a point, this is not our fault. Mm-hmm. Our job, we are told by Congress to keep this open,
make it
keep it clean, make it run well, and make it a good experience for people. And then the Congress or the administration, for whatever reason, shuts it down. I could see where they could have a little fun with that.
There should also be some natural progression with technology, too, because as an example, the FBI used to have a whole floor of the J. Edgar Hoover building with nothing but file cabinets full of fingerprints.
Oh, sure.
And then they automated fingerprint processing, and that service was moved to West Virginia. But it really decreased the size of the staff needed to manage those files, because now they're automated. And a lot of the processing, which we used to look at loops and swirls on somebody's fingertips, is now read by a computer. So a lot of the employees were replaced by technology. And the same thing at OPM with the retirement processing. If they can get a software package together that will accurately process retirement cases, then the need for as many claims examiners or the legal, whatever they call them, that we used to call them claims examiners that process the cases, there won't be as many needed like we need now to get those cases out, and it'll go smoother and quicker. So I think with technology, we should see a natural shrinkage of the workforce because of, you know, having computers do things more efficiently than we can as human beings.
Hey, before we run out of time, I want to ask you the magic question that the world wants to know what Tammy Flanagan is. What's the best day to retire?
How long have we been talking about this, Mike, for like 25 years?
That's
how
retire.
We met. That's
we're
how we met.
Retire
was on
doing
the
this, yeah.
Best date to retire. We talked about this. Well, this year, you know, employees looking to retire this week, basically, we'll see the CSRS employees probably be off the payroll by Thursday, by January 3rd, as usual, because you're still within the 2012 leave year until January 12th of this year, of 2013. For the end of 2013, it'll be an interesting year, because with FERS employees, this is when the full sick leave credit kicks in. And I think most FERS employees are aware of that change coming. So in order to get full credit for their sick leave, they have to retire January 1st of 2014 or later. So for them, they may as well just wait till, you know, January 11th, I guess, is the end of the leave year. So they'll be going out on January 10th or 11th to take advantage of a few more days of salary, another holiday, and full credit for their sick leave. Where CSRS employees, the end of this year, end of next year, January 3rd is a good date for both years. And the reason why we always talk about the end of the year is because so many employees save up their annual leave.
Right.
And they get paid for their annual leave, and they kick that check into the next year. If there is a basic pay increase at the end of 2013, the leave will be paid at the higher rate. So a lot of those things take effect at the end of the year, and it can maximize how much they get paid for.
And even if taxes go up from year to year, you're still kicking it into a year when you'll presumably have less income.
If you're retired, if you're fully retired.
You have a perfect segue into bringing this down to a smooth landing. We have about a minute left. So this was a great look into the future. I mean, it couldn't
yes.
have been better. Right?
And this is for
so
real.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Tammy.
The rest of this, we don't know what we're talking
yeah,
about.
But
when, Tammy says,
January 3rd, it's January 3rd.
Okay, so we looked at the good, we looked at the not so good, and we looked at reality, and we wound up looking into the future almost month by month. So don't let the news drive you crazy. And thank you, Tammy. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next week with the
next
director
year.
Of the Thrift.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.